Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I don't want to scare anyone, but I'm going to give it to you straight about Jason. His body was never recovered from the lake after he drowned. And if you listen to the old timers in town, they'll tell you he's still out there. Some sort of demented creature. Surviving in the wilderness. Full grown by now. Some folks claim they've even seen him. Right in this area.
From the cold, chilly cabins of Camp Crystal Lake
to outer space.
We are Halloweenies!
Greetings and welcome to a very special episode of Halloweenies, a Jason Voorhees podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Justin Jason Voorhees Gerber. I really dug deep for that one.
Yeah.
And wow. And who is that joining me in Higgins Haven? Higgins Haven, excuse me.
Well, hey, look, I've jumped two movies forward, and I'm wearing my denim jacket. This is Mike Tommy Jarvis Rothman. Taking that, going to probably piss off a few of the co-hosts, considering he's the hunkiest and greatest character in the whole franchise. But I'm going to clarify that I'm also not the Tommy Jarvis from Final Chapter, but Jason Lives. So I truly get to be the best Tommy Jarvis. No,
because I think, Mike, you said you're jumping ahead two movies. So I immediately thought you meant the John Shepard performance from A New Beginning.
Oh, yeah. No. Never mind. So three movies. Oh, God.
Heavily
no.
Disturbed. Who's going
yeah,
to
a just sweaty the entire time because everyone's just like sweltering through that entire fucking movie.
Like, to be fair, though, you have been having awful visions of Jason Voorhees in front yards.
It's true, yes, and I did just see somebody axe someone in this random introduction scene.
Well, as I always say, you should never offer people candy bars. That's what happens.
True. Oh, Lord. God.
Well, Mike, listen, we are here for a very special occasion because as we have been teasing through just about every episode this season, we landed Shelley Finkelstein himself. That's right. We've got Larry Zerner from Friday the 13th, Part 3. We've been talking a lot about him. And as we also discussed, he's been a practicing lawyer for decades now, and he has been the go-to source on social media regarding this mess of a Friday the 13th rights case that's been going on for years now. And if you stick around for the end of that episode, we really do dive into that. He gives a really great, you know, explanation as to what's going on for anybody like Mike and I who cannot truly figure it out. He does a great job of explaining it, also explaining – you know, whether or not this case could actually be resolved much sooner than I expected, Mike.
I agree. I was a little shocked. Still seems like we got quite a ways to go, which is unfortunate. But
because there's some other things going on in the world that might preclude that case from settling.
As quickly as it
could have.
Have another little spooky tangent with regards to law also that I was really shocked to stumble upon in my research. And I'm very excited for you to hear that, too. So
and a lot of that takes place in the second half of the conversation. The first half definitely revolves around Friday the 13th Part 3 and Larry Zerner's involvement in that movie and kind of the aftermath and the years that followed with, you know, in regards to, you know, conventions and keeping in touch. We touch
like
upon
the franchise
Richard Rooker a little bit. We talk a lot about the Friday franchise, like you said, Mike, in general. But before we get into that, is there anything else you wanted to talk about in the realm of horror? Anything off the top of your head?
No, not at the moment. I do think that we should just finally go into Higgins Haven and meet Shelley himself.
Let's do it.
Hi, Flirt.
Hi, is this Larry Zerner?
Yes, it is.
Hi, this is Mike Rothman and Justin Gerber from Halloweenies Podcast.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Well, first off, apologies again over last weekend's tweet. We definitely got out of hand, and we just really wanted to stress that we've wanted you from day one on this podcast. You know, and thank you so much for doing this with us, and I can't appreciate it anymore. So
wait. Before you start.
Yeah.
I I have to tell you the story, the bitch line in part three.
Okay.
I got to give you some context because I know I heard a lot of Shelley's an incel jokes there. Okay. So that line's not in the script. So you have to go back. You guys are a little younger than me. At the time, there was a character on Saturday Night Live, Emily Latella, played by Gilda Radner, who would go on, I don't know if you're familiar with the character, she would go on the Weekend Update and do her thing, mm-hmm. say, either against violence on television. And then Jane Curtin would go, it's not violence, it's violence.
Oh, yeah, I remember this bit.
And then she'd go, never mind. And then she'd go, bitch.
Yep.
To Jane Curtin.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is 1982. This is still in the zeitgeist. Not in the zeitgeist anymore. It's still in the zeitgeist. So we're doing the scene. I know Steve's about to say cut. And I throw the bitch in just to break up the crew. And which it did. And everyone understood the context of what I said, why I was saying that. And then Steve said, do it again and keep it.
Well, see, that's fascinating. I did not know that.
Of course you didn't know that. Who would know that? Only I knew that.
I grew up on, there would be Saturday Night Live reruns on Nick at Night. I would watch all those growing up in the 80s. But once you said that and the Jane Curtin bit at Weekend Update, I remember I was like, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. She's got the little glasses on. She's kind of nerdy. Really delicate. I remember
that. Yes, right. So that's what I was doing. That's the sort of what was going through Shelley's head at the time. Mm-hmm. He's not like, fucking bitch, I'm going to fucking kill you. Like, that's not what it's more like just Emily Latella going, like, in his head, he's making that joke.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't play. But, like, when I saw the movie last year at a screening, it just doesn't carry over after 38 years. Like, it has a different context.
And it's kind of like our tweet obviously didn't play either. And so again, we appreciate you coming on with us here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest, craziest issues right now in terms of even contextualizing horror is that, I mean, even last week, Joe Bob was getting into hot water because of, things that he was discussing in his own op-eds, and it just feels like everyone's it's just a very particular time, I think, where I've noticed that things either A, don't hold up, or B, things are getting reevaluated nonstop, and people forget the lack of context in that. I mean, it's kind of like the worst case example of when I remember seeing a screening of Halloween a couple years ago at the Music Box, and there were a bunch of people that were just like, God, the movie was boring. And I was like, well, I guess maybe by today's standards, but by the time it was 1978, it was one of the most terrifying movies of all time. And I just feel like that lack of context with people sometimes is one of the biggest pitfalls, I feel like, in with anything in pop culture right now. But I digress.
yeah, Halloween, I mean, it's like when you go, there's only six people killed in the whole movie, right? It's like,
right? Yeah.
Not the fest. And really there's one in the beginning, there's the murder in the beginning, and then nothing until an hour in, right?
Yeah.
It's a long time between. So yeah. It's not like if a studio made it, they'd be like, no, we need one every, or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
10 minutes, we need a kill.
Oh, totally. Anyway.
It's like a horror movie. You gotta have your sex every 10 minutes, mm-hmm. otherwise.
Well, speaking of sex, and obviously kills every 10 minutes, that's a great transition right into the Friday the 13th franchise, which absolutely delivers on that. Going into Friday the 13th Part 3, I guess the year was it 1982, I think, when production started on that?
1982, yeah.
That's right. And what was the public consciousness around the franchise at that time, at that point?
I would say not, I can't speak for the public, for myself. The first movie had come out, done well. The second movie came out a year later, did, half the business. So it was just whatever, you're on the third of a dying, whatever. It's a third in a franchise. It wasn't a franchise, just two. One that had done well, one that had done okay. There was no, but again, there's, because the first one is so of itself, right? It just, it mm-hmm. is. It's right. It's its own movie. It's the second one is not. You know, it's a continuation only in the loosest sense because, right, you're just, we've created a new killer, right? Because you couldn't, because the first killer, because, you know, Mrs. Voorhees is dead. So I don't think there was much, and also, right, Sackhead Jason is just not that, in my opinion, you know, not the, like, that one, like, if they had kept Sackhead Jason, it would have stopped.
Yeah,
I think the Sackhead being in only one movie, I think, for a lot of people, makes it kind of a special situation, you know? It's just not as prevalent, obviously, as the hockey mask definitely became over the next, what, 30, 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. I mean, the hockey mask is iconic. It really is. You can show pretty much anyone in the United States that hockey mask, and they know what you're talking about. They know what movie you're talking about. They know who, you know, so a lot of cap people will go, oh, that's Freddy Krueger, but they still understand. It's something to do with a horror movie. but, you know, if you had the, if you showed them a sack, they would be like, oh, I don't know what that is. It just wouldn't have ingrained in their culture the way the hockey mask did. For whatever, they hit lightning in a bottle.
So it almost feels like the franchise had just, like, kept reinventing itself at that point. You know, like the first one you're saying, like, it, you know, it is Mrs. Voorhees. Second one, it's like, all right, shit, well, what do we do? Well, I guess we just go with Jason. Third one, well, we have Jason, but what do we do now? And it's like, it is like an interesting time, I guess, in the long run and in hindsight, because you look back and you're like, well, yeah, the hockey mask wasn't there. So like the iconography of the film hadn't even been set yet. And I wonder, just even like at the culture at large, like with regards to slashers, like had the tropes even been set yet? Like when you went into, you know, Friday 3 and you started filming the movie, like was the concepts of like the final girl and, you know, the morality of people having sex and getting killed, were those rules there? Like, was that part of the consciousness going into this movie?
I would say, but it wasn't said, the word final girl, I think that was probably in the 90s before they went back and said, this is a final girl. But I think they knew what a, there is, they, this is how they end. They end with a girl being chased, and she's the good girl. You know, that I think that had been established. I think people understood that. But I don't think it was spoken so much.
It wasn't ingrained
in
the... It
was more like, if you look at, like, the Siskel and Ebert reviews, where they're like, oh, they're all just girls getting killed. It's like, there's always that thing that it's just about girls getting killed, and it's like, hey, in Friday the 13th, there's more men killed than women.
Totally. You know, so. Yeah.
It's like, Siskel and Ebert obviously famously... Siskel and Ebert famously hated the Friday the 13th movies and most slasher movies, but somebody on YouTube... Right. Edited their Friday the 13th Part 2 review with a positive review. And so it made it look like they were giving it this glowing review. It's pretty funny. It's on YouTube.
Check it out.
What we have to talk about, of course, is the hockey mask. And, you know, we think about the other great horror villains of the era. You know, Michael Myers, he just steals his off screen from a convenience store. Freddy Krueger makes his. Leatherface, of course, makes his from human skin. But I feel like you're the only victim that of any of these franchises from any period who's actually responsible for the killer's mask. So, I mean, at the time, in the script, it was not listed that it was a hockey mask, correct?
Correct.
Wow. That's so
at
weird.
What point?
And I don't know. It's like, I don't even know that I thought about it. Like, I didn't even... think about it, because he already had another mask, right? He had that mask in the first scene, the clear mask, which they weren't going to use, but I don't know that I didn't think of it. And then, of course, I didn't, you know, it's like, I didn't really read, you know, it's like, maybe I read the script once, you know, to see what was going after Mime Dead, but that was it. I didn't really like, you don't really go, like, I'm sure the people are thinking he's got a mask on, but I'm not. You're not thinking that because you're just reading a script, and it doesn't say he's got this mask on the whole time. I'm sure it did, but it's like I didn't think about it until I saw it, and then it was cool, but it didn't become right. It didn't become an icon until the movie did well, but. I don't know when it became iconic. I don't know where, and it you know, obviously, as they kept, I think on the four, right, they used it on the four poster, right?
Yeah.
Which obviously was a big deal. So then they started using it as sort of the marketing for the movie. It became the symbol of the movie, and so that sort of put it into people's consciousness. I had no idea that it would be this thing, although I did ask him for the mask at the end of the shoot. I said, can I have the mask?
Did they give it to you? Oh, they said no? Oh, my God. No.
They were like,
maybe they knew something.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, although no one knows where that mask went. No one knows where they were. There were a few masks made for the first movie. There, you know, and you know, I've been dealing with the people who did Crystal Lake Memories, and nobody knows what happened to the original mask, which would be worth a tidy sum today.
Oh, I imagine. That's so weird how that happens. Like, I remember when, God, I think it was like Halloween H2O or one of the sequels, they're like, well, let's try to find the mask, the original mask, you know, this iconic piece of Hollywood memorabilia. And I remember like reading how it was just like impossible to find. They're like, when someone was like, oh, well, actually it was in a shoebox underneath my bed or whatever. And it's like, what are you fucking nuts? Like, this is like iconic properties. Like, how is this not a thing? And I guess just at the time, it must have been just like, oh, well, shooting's done. Throw everything in a closet and we're done.
I don't know. One of the producers may have taken it, but yeah. Then it just, whatever. I mean, somehow it got put in a shoebox and no one ever found it again.
Yeah. God. So. I like to imagine it's just sitting somewhere in a garage, like next to fishing poles or, you know, like a cooler or something like that. And it's just like families coming in and out and it's just sitting there. It's just a piece of iconic.
And no one would visit you. You could never prove it. Look, I got this mask. It's the original. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right.
Maybe Steve Miner has it with, you know, like a house poster somewhere in his guest room somewhere. You know, I don't know. Who knows? We'll never know.
You know, there aren't a lot of scenes with, you know, Shelley and Jason actually together, but how close did you get with Richard Brooker over the years?
We had no scenes together. I'd see him on set, but he was always separate from us.
Yeah.
Because he's doing his makeup, or I'd see him smoke his pipe, but he's kind of intimidating, and he's wearing that makeup, so it's like, I didn't really want to talk to him too much. It was like, so we weren't hanging out on the set at all, and then I didn't see anyone again until the 20-year anniversary.
Oh, wow.
There was a screening at the New Art in L.A., that was just happenstance. They happened to be doing a week of 3D movies, and it happened to be almost exactly 20 years from, so it was August of 2002, and I said, man, it'd be great to see everyone, and I started to make some calls. I said, let's call people, and I got a hold of Paul Kratka, I brought Paul, and then Steve Susskind showed up, and then Brooker showed up because his girlfriend had heard about it and just brought him. and none of us had seen it in theaters because it never showed in theaters in the 20 years. So that was really cool. It was a great screening, and that's where the first time I saw Brooker in 20 years, and just an aside, there's a story behind it, but that was the day that I met Pete Brackey, and that was the day he decided to start writing Crystal Lake Memories.
Interesting.
Oh, wow. That's an incredible documentary, yeah.
The book. That's where he started the book, and then that led to the documentary. So, I digress. And then, I only saw Richard, three or four times after that, at conventions or screenings. Otherwise, we didn't, I didn't see him. So
on that note, the 80s were such a hotbed for horror, but it feels like right now, I mean, just with regards to how, it's just widespread and ubiquitous horror is, we're so used to horror cons and we're so used to even festivals, like film festivals with regards to horror. Did the 80s, was there any of that really in the 80s for that got to see?
Nothing.
It just felt like nothing, right?
Nothing.
Yeah, that's
nothing.
So
there was nothing. There was, because, it really needs I think it really needs the internet to have that sort of thing. There were a few, there were like autographed things that in LA there was there were some where you just go and get rent, like, oh, it's the cast of Gilligan's Island,
yeah,
and the people from Planet of the Apes, and just random collection of people who would you could get autographs from, but it was there wasn't anything like that. I think Fangoria and Chiller started their stuff in like the 2000s. Because right, how do you tell people about something like that, right? It just needed the internet, I think, to push it. And then I didn't go to a convention until I think it was 2005 or something like that. It was a Chiller convention near the Meadowlands, and that was the first time we hit, like, there was in one room. It was me, Adrian, Amy Steele, Kane, Ari Lehman, maybe John LeMay. I mean, just a bunch of us got together. You know, we're in this place. None of us had ever, like, Adrian had never done anything because she had that stalker. So she had, this was her first convention. And then, like, there were a line an hour deep to get into the room. And we're like, what? And then after that, there was a lot more, you know, people said, you know, it's like it takes a while before you become the nostalgia and you're not just a whatever, you know.
You know, you mentioned the movies. I mean, did you keep up with the Friday the 13th franchise after your entry, or did you go back to it years later after you started to go to the conventions and meet more people from the movies?
I don't think I saw another one in the theater until 8 came out.
Oh, wow.
And then I remember seeing 8 and going, oh, that was bad.
Yeah.
Tough break.
Well, you know, because they sold it wrong, right? I mean, you know, we can talk about the problems with 8. I mean, you know, when they get to Manhattan, it's great. But otherwise, yeah, it's not a good movie.
Love that.
I was not really keeping up with what was going on. I think the only ones I saw in theaters when they, in their original release, 8 and 10, and then I was at the premiere of Jason, because by the time Freddy vs. Jason and the new one came out, I was back, you know, I was with more into the thing, you know, in the 2000s, but no, I didn't really see all those.
Oh, interesting.
I remember in like 85, 86, I was on an audition and I saw Crispin Glover there, and he looked at me and he was like, hey, how are you? And I'm like, why does George McFly know who I am? Because I had not seen 4, and I didn't realize that he was like, you were the guys, were the nerds from the movies.
Oh my God.
I just was like, you know, hey, I feel so bad about that. I feel really bad because I was like, I would love to talk to him about it. He's so great in Part 4. But, you know, when I saw it, I was like, God, he did great stuff, and I just would have loved to talk to him about it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, like, each season for podcasts, we go through different franchises, and, you know, like Halloween and was the first one, last year was Nightmare, and this year is obviously Friday. And I feel like with Friday, just because the cast rotates so much, does it feel like there's a Friday family? I know that, like, there's definitely, I've seen at conventions, there's like Nightmare family, just because you get the heroines in that movie. And then with Halloween, it's like, obviously with the family link, so you're going to have the recurring cast members, but Friday's so sprawling and with so many different casts, like, is there a Friday family?
There is. I mean, because when I go to the conventions and we see, you know, it's all like we went to the same camp.
Mm-hmm.
Really, right? You know, hey, oh yeah, you went a different year, but you remember that guy, right? That big guy who killed us? Yes, I remember him. And if I'm like, I remember, you know, if I'm out and I run into like someone's, Russell Todd lives in the neighborhood and I'll run into him from Part 2, or, you know, you see anybody, you know, and then because of the conventions, you know, I don't do a lot, but I do, you know, maybe one a year. And so you see, you know, you just become, they're all your buddies, you know, Kane and CJ and Ari so it's, yeah, it's, there is a family.
That's cool.
Maybe we're not as tight as the Nightmare people, but we're
family. Over the years, you can,
there's a lot more of us. There's a lot more of us.
And there's so many movies. I mean, good God, like, I mean, the fact that we're almost at 13 is, well, I mean, it's been 20 something years, but It's pretty wild, but
yeah, we can talk about the hopeful 13th movie in a minute here. But before we do that, I mean,
yeah.
When did you decide to go into law, Larry? Was it, had you always had an inkling that you wanted to do that even before you started acting, or how did that come about?
No, I was like, no. So my dad was a lawyer, and I was like, I'm never going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be an actor. I'm an actor. You know, that's the thing. And then Hollywood said, you know what, Larry? Maybe you're not going to be an actor. and then Dad said, I'll pay for law school. I'm like, nice. I'm not going anywhere, so that'll at least buy me some time to figure out what I want to do. So went to law school, and but really enjoyed it and found it to be a good, you know, it's something I'm good at. It's like it's a different part of my brain, you know, the analytical part, but I did well in law school, and I really enjoyed being a lawyer, and now I represent a lot of people in the horror community, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, which is really fucking cool. I mean, one of the things I didn't realize that you represented, like, the actual George Lutz the Amityville thing. Now, when you talked to him, did you get an inkling that, like, a lot of, like, that stuff really did happen? That this is, like, I mean, do you believe that stuff? I mean, what were your thoughts on that?
Okay, so George is great guy. Here's the thing. I would ask him about it. He would never say, oh, no, I made that up, right? He would never say anything like that.
Oh, of course. No.
Sometimes if I pressed him on, like, what about this? He might wiggle a little bit, but here's the real interesting thing that, like, the fact about George Lutz, which is you just can't dispute this, undisputed.
Yeah.
Here's a guy, he's not a writer, he's not a professional writer, never wrote anything, right? Moved into this house that he bought, moved out 28 days later, never moved back in,
yeah,
and then turned it into this story that made millions, right? Mm-hmm. Now, he's not, again, nobody buys a house and then runs out and goes, you know what, this is my plan. I'm going to make this is my plan. I will leave it, and then, of course, I will tell the story, and I will make me millions, and so this is a good plan, right? That is the stupidest plan anyone has ever made, right?
Oh,
so
totally.
That's the weird part about it, right? It really triggered something, that story. And I still remember reading the book.
Yeah.
I was on vacation. I was 13 years old and on vacation in Hawaii, and, you know, on a bright beach, and being scared out of my wits. I have that. I still have that memory. That book is so viscerally scary.
Yeah.
So there's something there, you know, but what it is, I don't know. I mean, and look, and it's also true, the DeVeo family, right? That Ronnie DeVeo killed his family in that house. That's also undisputed. So,
yeah.
You know, quick question. Does George Lutz look like James Brolin?
Brolin's probably a better looking guy. You can see pictures of what George looked like. I mean, you know, he was a Long Island contractor. That's what he looked like.
I mean, neither of them look like Ryan Reynolds, of course, with the chisel. I don't think anyone does.
Nobody looks like Ryan Reynolds.
God, right. What a hunk. But
I will be played by Ryan Reynolds, I'm sure.
Just such a cool story, though, that they got to be linked on that, because I've always been obsessed with that ever since I was a kid. And, like, you, I read it at a young age, and it just definitely informed my perceptions on, like, the supernatural and stuff. Like, I'm a believer of that stuff. So, like, I've always just been just absolutely obsessed with it. And so I saw that, I just had to ask. But
yeah, it's an amazing story. And again, if he wrote it, if he made it up, the fact that this guy who is not, right, again, not a writer, not a professional writer, created one of the most lasting, most horrifying, best-selling horror books of all times is stunning.
Yeah.
Now, we'd love to talk to you a little bit about the Friday the 13th issue, because, again, you've been very gracious with your time on Twitter trying to kind of, you know, rustle your way through the weeds of this case and everything. And like I said, from day one, we would try to explain the case. It was just a big word scramble, and it was just a nightmare trying to explain. We're like, hopefully one day we can have Larry Zerner give us kind of break down and give us the layman explanation as to what is going on. Can you give us a kind of a breakdown as to what started this case and where it stands now? Because even that's kind of murky.
Sure. So the first thing you have to understand is that there is a provision in the Copyright Act, which was fairly new. And it said that if you write something and sell it, and sell your rights away, after 35 years, you can terminate that assignment and get the rights back. And the idea was to protect, really, you know, like these musicians who, like in the 50s, would sign away all their copyrights of their songs, and then the songs would be big hits, and they never see another dime because they were, you know, 18 years old, 20 years old, and taking advantage, and now they're in their 50s and have you know, no money, and the songs are still making money for the songs that they sold for $1,000, you know.
Yeah. Is that so kind of like Michael Jackson, Paul McCartney situation from the 80s where the Beatles material?
No, that's different.
Oh.
That's different.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, besides him being rich.
Let's not confuse it. That's different. But so anyway, so you can, after 35 years, you can terminate the transfer. So Victor, who wrote Friday the 13th, the script, mm-hmm. he sent a notice of termination to Sean, or Sean's company, Horror Inc. Now, there is an exception to this rule of termination. And the exception is if the original work was considered a, quote, work for hire, unquote, then you cannot terminate. Okay? And to be a work for hire, you either had to have an agreement that said it's a work for hire, or you had to be what the Supreme Court has said is really an employee of the person who hired you. And looking at factors such as, how are you paid? Were you paid by the hour or the project? Who gave you your materials? Could you work on other things at the time? Who set your time when you could work? Who set the place you could work, right? Is it more like a typical employee? Because if I go someplace and I'm paid by the hour, and someone, you know, if I go to McDonald's and they give me an apron and a spatula and I work by the hour, right, I'm an employee. But if I go to someone's house and I paint their house and they say, it's $1,000, get it done, and I supply all my own brushes and stuff, then I'm more an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. So in the Miller Sean case, the question is, Sean said, Victor was my employee under these rules, so it was a work for hire, and therefore he cannot terminate the transfer, and so I still own the rights. So that's what they've been fighting about. The lower court, held that Victor was not an employee, and therefore the termination was valid. And at the moment, Victor owns the rights to the first script, and that is on appeal. And the appeal was briefed and argued in February, and we are waiting for the decision, which is a good chance will come in the next month.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's soon.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
Normally, if things are argued in February, because the court sort of had a season, and the season ends at the end of June, and usually they try and get stuff done, all the stuff that was argued during the year, by June. Not always, but usually. So there's a very good chance that we'll have a decision by the appellate court. And the appellate court can either uphold the decision and say, yes, Victor is not an employee, the termination is valid. They could reverse and say, nope, Sean was the employee. Sean was an employer, and so Victor's not own any rights. Mm-hmm. Or they could send it back for a trial, which would be the worst case scenario. Because then back and do another trial.
Yeah, god damn it.
It'd be another few years before we get. So we're waiting to hear, and then either whatever decision happens, the other side will probably appeal it to the Supreme Court. That means they will ask the court to grant cert, which meaning, you know, grant the petition. Supreme Court grants 1% of all the cert petitions they get. So not much chance that they would do that. If they did that, we would know whether the Supreme Court would take the case the last week of September, because that's when they grant the petitions, and then they start the first week of October. So that's the timeline.
Thank God.
And at the moment, Warner Brothers and Sean have they can't really make any movies until they resolve this. And at the moment, they're not trying to resolve it. There was a period of time where they were trying. Now, my understanding from my sources tell me no one's trying to do anything right now. They're just waiting to see what happens.
Yeah. It's a fascinating case, and it's easy to kind of back either horse in this, I feel. I mean, your decades of being in the law profession, where do you personally stand on this? Do you kind of side with Victor Miller, or are you more in Sean S. Cunningham's camp when it comes to the outcome?
I've always said that I think Victor has the better case. This is exactly why the Congress passed this law that said after 35 years you can terminate the transfer, because Victor basically sold his rights in the movie for $9,200. Right, and he turned it into a franchise that has made hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the idea being, okay, now he's allowed to go back in and share some of that money, make a real deal based on what it's worth now. I understand it would be easier for everybody if Victor lost, because then they don't have to make a deal.
Life goes on.
But this was always an uphill battle for Sean, and the lower court ruled pretty exactly as I predicted. So
I'm imagining C-SPAN airings of Friday the 13th case.
Yeah, like Jason goes to Supreme, or Jason goes to the court, or goes to Washington, or whatever. Oh my God! Like that'd be the headlines alone would be a fun to write, and then really depressing to think about of just how long this has been.
Well, he could go in because he's wearing a mask.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good one.
Actually, they don't have not having, you know, they're only having, they're having hearings on the phone now, so they don't know.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's actually, I was going to ask you, like, how have you been handling quarantine, and how has it affected the, you know, the law, you know, profession?
I just need a computer and a phone to do my job. Pretty much. So yeah. I'm just working at home. It's not that different for me. There's no trials at the moment. So
that's wild.
That's the one thing they have to figure out. But I didn't have any trial scheduled. So.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I can only imagine the weeds that's gonna cause for that one. Jesus. Well, what do you in terms of you know, keeping yourself entertained? Do you watch horror? Are you a big horror fan still? Even though, is it just something that was in the past?
I love good horror.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, I don't like bad horror, but I try and watch what I can. I mean, what did I just see that was good? Oh, Madeline on Netflix. The French, it's a French witch tale. It's amazing. It's really great. If you haven't seen that, you know, the Mike Flanagan stuff, Austin on Hill's great. Love that.
Are you a Stephen King fan at all?
I've been a Stephen King fan from day one. I mean, I've read every single one of his books. I mean,
need to have you on another one of our podcasts.
We've been running a Stephen King podcast for a few years now. It's just been my life for I think like every day for the last 3 years. But what are some of your favorites of his bibliography?
I guess I go back to, you know, I love The Stand. Mm-hmm. I loved the Stand and the book. What's the book that has Shawshank in it? Different Seasons. The Night Watch, is that the short story? The short story collection.
Night Shift. Yeah, God, that book
Night
is
Shift.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's great. You know, but all of Carrie, Dead Zone, Shining. I wasn't a huge fan of the Dark Tower.
Me either. I'm kind of get ostracized a little bit for that, but I just thought it was, I kind of like it when it's just kind of more grounded in reality. I feel like it gets a little too crazy with the Dark Tower
stuff. I just like the horror. I never got into the world. I didn't care for that world.
And same.
So I just read, you know, the day it came out, I read the new collection of books and thought, that first story where the world is ending was just amazing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That one, and it goes to a really emotional place. I was like in tears by the end of that one.
I am Multitudes. That's what
yeah. Yeah. It's the Life of Chuck. That one just, yeah, it hit me.
I still have to read this.
It's amazing. Yeah. It really had a really gut punch. It was great. Yeah. It's a great story.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. Just been awesome to talk, especially, you know, with quarantine, it's very hard to, we don't get to like meet up a lot anymore. So doing these interviews over Skype and Zoom has been a lot of fun, for us. And, like last month, I think I spoke to Elvira, and she was, usually a lot of these interviews would go like 30 minutes. And it was just like at the 45 minute mark, I was like, hey, I'm sorry to go on. She's like, I'm not doing anything. This is great. Like, let's just keep talking.
Right.
So we were just like, holy shit.
Talk, please talk.
Yeah.
To me.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, hopefully down the road at one of these conventions, if they become a thing again, love to shake your hand. And thank you so much, Mr. Zernin. This has been a delight.
Thanks so much.
Where are you guys? What state are you guys in?
We're both in Chicago, actually.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I really wanted to go to – I talked to about going to Days of the Dead in Chicago in November.
That's so much fun.
I don't think it's gonna happen, but
I know.
It does.
Maybe next November. I think you should pencil that in.
Well, it sucks.
It is on my list to go to Chicago.
It's a great place. Yeah. Well, I know that they have a festival here, Cinepocalypse, that's at the Music Box. It's just this amazing music, this amazing movie theater that's down the street. And I know one of the things that we were trying to do before this was get some sort of 40th anniversary thing for Friday and have like a bunch of people from there. But I don't know, maybe next year.
That'd be great. Well, look, because we got another 2 years, so hopefully.
Yeah.
This will be done, and life will be back to normal. And
that would be great.
It'd be so great to have a 40th.
Totally.
I mean, I hope they do some 40th anniversary screenings. Because to see it in 3D, you guys have not seen it in 3D,
I've
right?
not, yeah.
Or one of you
no.
had?
I've
no,
not,
I've
no.
Not.
Oh, you
no.
didn't?
Yeah.
Didn't somebody on the pod, when I was listening, someone said they saw it in Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah, Mike Vanderbilt saw it years ago.
Yeah, I think
yes.
he might have seen
he
it.
Did
right.
See.
Yeah. So
that's the other thing. If you haven't seen it in 3D, you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
You could tell. It's so structured that way.
It's so much more fun.
Yeah.
To see it in a theater in 3D, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work in 2D on television. It doesn't. The movie is made to see in a screen in a big theater with a bunch of people and everything popping out and everyone screaming. When that eyeball pops, it's so great.
Oh,
I mean, that's the thing. You lose that. The eyeball, Andy's death, the spear when Vera dies, all that stuff is so great in the theater. They screened it last year at the Egyptian.
Oh, man.
Oh,
that would have been amazing.
So it's,
and
okay.
It was great in 3D. And the crowd just loved it. So, you know, and everybody does rankings of the movies, of the Friday movies. It's like, well, you got if once you've seen it in 3D in a theater, the ranking goes up. For
oh, I'm sure.
Then you see it's a much better movie.
Yeah,
that way.
Yeah,
much more fun.
Well, hopefully we can get that get a print. I mean, they usually do are able to find some pretty hard to find stuff here at the Music Box. So I'm hoping that they are able to do that because we'd love to do. I mean, that would be just the big appeal for sure, over than any of the other movies.
There are 3D prints. You got to find them because I know they. They had it at the Egyptian last year, so
yeah,
incredible.
Well, we'll definitely keep in touch on that because that would be awesome to have some sort of reunion out there for that if it could actually happen.
Yeah,
but
all right.
Well, have a great weekend, and let's
you
keep
too.
In touch for sure. Thanks a lot.
Okay. All the best.
All right. Okay.
All right. I have a bet. Do we see Would you be willing to put $10 down right now? Or no, $13. Let's be on brand. $13 that we see Friday the 13th movie for the 45th anniversary.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Wait. Do we both agree on that?
I think so. I guess we can't really make a bet.
Well,
on this,
you can give me $13, and I'll give you 13 yeah. of my own dollars.
Well, hey, it's the price of a ticket. Although, who knows what the price of tickets are going to be come what is it? What would it be? 2025?
Yeah. 2025. Oh, let me ask you this question, Mike. Do you think LeBron James will still be involved in 2025 if that were to
happen? I hope so. I mean, he seems to be getting more and more involved in film, as we saw at The Last Dance, the great Last Dance, easily the greatest piece of pop culture we had all year. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Jordan set the way for basketball stars in Hollywood, and I believe LeBron James is trying to make that a little bit more. I think that he's been performing in a lot of movies. He's probably my favorite part of Trainwreck in hindsight, even over Bill Hader. And
Amari
Stoudemire is great. Yeah,
he's performance. Good. He's really only in the one scene where he's recovering. So,
but I think that LeBron really wants to kind of change the game, as he did for the NBA. I think he wants to do it for Hollywood, and I wouldn't be surprised if like his love of horror still endures even past all this legal mumbo jumbo. So I'm hoping that he's involved, because I think that he's got the heart in this movie. You know, we go back, not to go too much of an tangent on LeBron, but you go back to those videos that he shared on Instagram. He's not watching the Halloween remake or, you know, the many shitty sequels that came after. He's watching the originals. Like he was watching like Halloween 2, 1981. So like you know, I think his heart is in the right place. I'm hoping that LBJ is able to keep this going.
Well, he's also just he's obviously one of the greatest basketball players of all time.
Obviously.
Hi, this is the Halloweenies, Jason Voice podcast. But I really want to say this. I want to say he's also an extremely savvy businessman. Extremely savvy. He really knows his stuff. He surrounds himself with really, really smart people. Maverick Carter is one of the smartest people in that industry, just the entertainment industry at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, aside from the decision, which was that broadcast was a disaster. I'm not saying that the decision he actually made was a disaster. Broadcast was a disaster. But honestly, in the last 10 years, no major missteps from him. So hopefully he can continue that on.
I know.
Granted, we'll have to see how Space Jam 2, what's it called again? The last something. What's it called?
Space Jam 2. I can't remember what it's called
now. The next phase, the next dance.
Let me see what it is. The next dance. It would be hilarious if they did just change it just because of The Last Dance. Oh, A New Legacy. You don't even really need to have... It's not even called Space Jam 2. It's called Space Jam A New Legacy because Hollywood's terrified of numericals at this point, which is kind of annoying, but...
Yeah, because God forbid they say, please go watch Space Jam.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if any future releases of Space Jam will omit R. Kelly's I Believe I Can Fly from the closing credits. Do you think that
I hope so. That'd be that'd be a good thing. Or that you get someone else to sing it. That'd be good. Get Frank Ocean to do a cover of it. And you could just omit the fact that R. Kelly ever did it. That'd be awesome.
Even though he wrote it and would still get all the...
Yeah, he probably would get all the royalties
for the re-recording. He would get even more money, probably.
God. It's like he makes bail because of Space Jam 2. Anyway, this was fun.
Yeah, definitely.
We got final chapter coming up. I'm coming back to the pod. I'm coming back to Camp Crystal Lake. I took a sojourn to Haddonfield for a little bit. I got a nice spring house there, and that's where I've been quarantining. But
well, I know that people in the springtime love to go to Haddonfield, New Jersey.
Oh, totally.
Haddonfield, Illinois. Excuse me.
Haddonfield, Illinois is a great place. You don't have to worry about any shapes and any ghouls or any goblins. You just get to enjoy the small town atmosphere, and that's what I've been doing. I've been kicking it with Sartain's son, and we've just been enjoying ourselves as we wait for the conclusion of Halloween.
Do you think Sartain's son will appear in either Halloween Kills or Halloween Ends? And
well,
if so, how happy will you be? I'll bet you $13 he appears.
Well, here's the thing. I know that I'm going to win the $13 because I know literally everything that happens in Halloween Kills. Now, the question is, does he show up as in Halloween Ends? Now, I just proved by saying that he's not in Halloween Kills, so I apologize for the spoilers there. But
spoilers, no Dr. Sartain Jr.
No Sartain Jr. in there. But I'm hoping that I have to give you back the $13 and he appears and makes a triumphant return to avenge his father in Halloween Ends. So
well, Mike, one way or the other, in 2025, money will be exchanging hands.
Yes.
Either
yes.
way. This has been fun, and we hope you enjoy the interview. again, yeah, final chapter coming up for June.
Oof,
and hopefully even more bonus episodes. You never know what's in the future, folks. Until then,
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.